Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Welcome. How are you doing? I'm doing great, thanks for asking. However, you do appear to be on mute, unfortunately. I can't hear you, but I'm a fantastic lip reader. There we go.
Thank you. How's that?
Yeah, perfect. Loud and clear. Maybe before we just get into your work and what keeps you busy, maybe you can just give people a brief outline of how you would describe your work.
I am a mythologist and an art historian. I've been studying ancient civilizations for over 30 years with a primary focus on stories that describe extraterrestrial intervention in human affairs, beings that have come from other worlds to perhaps accelerate our evolution or to even in some cases to interfere with our evolution.
There is a lot to discuss there, so I'm really excited about getting into this. So I suppose, what is it about kind of the historical aspects of it, the archaeological aspects of it, that kind of led you into also looking at maybe the spiritual aspect and the mythological aspect? Because a lot of people would say, well, there's a clear barrier between them things usually.
Yeah, I can see how you can see it that way. But really, when I started looking into the ancient temples, of course, beginning mostly in Egypt, many people are fascinated by the enormity of some of the constructions, the granite blocks that are used, sometimes weighing 80 to 100 tons and more. And that's fascinating. However, when you look at the purpose of the temples and the reason why they built these stone structures, it's almost always about human transformation. It's about higher beings, if you will, telling humans that we can transform and even join them in the stars. And they left teachings about how we can do this.
Great. So when we're talking of sort of temples of this description, whereabouts are we talking geographically?
Mostly the area around what we today refer to as the Middle East, beginning in Sumeria, Egypt, but it's really a worldwide phenomena. You can circle the globe going to Peru, to Bolivia, to Pumapunku. You can come over into the Pacific, where there are a number of ancient temples, some of them older than 10,000 years old. So really what we believe we're dealing with was a global culture that existed at one time that shared similar construction techniques as well as similar spiritual ideas.
Okay, so there's a lot here. It's a big topic, so I imagine a lot of people have got a lot of questions. So it's just at this point, it might be worth mentioning to those in the chat to get your best questions in for William, and I'll put them to him for sure. So in terms of this idea of a higher life form, a more intelligent life form having visited Earth, is this something you take to be a literal thing, or is this kind of something you'd put in the area of mythology? Where do you come down on this just from a personal perspective?
No, I believe that it was a literal visitation, that the ancient record is filled with descriptions of beings coming down from the sky and tales of their journeys from other worlds. And when we look at this, you think, well, you know, the distances are impossible. Even our nearest stars are simply too far for us to travel to, at least with our level of technology. But perhaps the ancients or the visitors that visited the ancients had a technology beyond ours. And this brings up sort of a qualification I like to make, that there are usually two types of beings that we're dealing with. There's the belief that there's physical flesh and blood beings that made this journey. But then there's also some evidence and descriptions that suggest that we're dealing with robots or drones or something along those lines. But then there's a third category, which I specialize in, and these are what are referred to as more like energy beings or light beings that can project their consciousness through the cosmos and even can phase into a physical flesh and blood body when they arrive at a destination world.
Okay. And what would you say are the best accounts of this kind of this thing, the idea that, you know, various beings in various forms have visited Earth and, you know, left an influence, an imprint already? What accounts are we kind of referring to?
Well, you can begin with the ancient Sumerian stories. There are some of the oldest human stories that tell of the Sumerian gods called the Anunnaki, who came from another realm, another world, and told how they then influenced human evolution by merging their own image with that of a more primitive creature on Earth. The Egyptians believed exactly the same thing. They tell of a god of technology whose name was Ptah, who came from Sirius and taught temple building. He taught mummification. He taught the art of resurrection and transfiguration. And this is, again, a story that is duplicated literally worldwide.
Okay. So, I mean, I'll let you know where I am on this sort of stuff. Right. So I am fascinated by, you know, mythology, history. I'm kind of praying and hoping, and this is as a kind of secular atheist, that we do get a visitation from aliens. I just think that'd be one of the most amazing things to ever happen. I'm open to life on other planets. I think it's probable. I'm just not there yet on the aliens have already visited us. I'm certainly not there on the sort of visiting rednecks and probing them in the deep south, you know, corn, you know, crop circles, things like that. But I'm open to being convinced. So I suppose just if I'm putting my skeptical, cynical hat on, a lot of people would say, well, human history is just full of mythology and stories. We are storytelling beings. This is one of our greatest inventions, in fact, storytelling. It allows us to, you know, have a shared identity, a shared culture, something to get around. And that's you know, I think the most prominent form of that, of course, is religion. We also have like nationalism, things like that. What's stopping that falling into the same category? How do you separate these accounts from mythology that is quite clearly untrue?
Well, you know, what's been happening recently, Stephen, is you've got scientists looking into this question. I mean, on Ancient Aliens, the show I've been a part of for 16 seasons, we've had over 250 academics, PhDs, and scientists on the show commenting about this in a positive way, not coming on to slice and dice the idea. They're coming in from their own experience to affirm that some of these ideas that extraterrestrial beings were involved in accelerating human evolution in particular could be, in fact, a fact. We can't 100% prove it. And more what is happening, especially in America, is that the environment has shifted. You know, 10 years ago, you would rarely see an academic or an established scientist risking their reputation to talk about this subject. But there's been a sea change in the past 10 years. With, in America, we call it the disclosure movement. We've got Congress and the Senate discussing this subject openly. In fact, the congressmen and senators are worried that these aren't physical flesh and blood beings that we're dealing with. They're actually interdimensional beings. And this is now a topic on the floor of the U.S. Senate. It hasn't reached Parliament yet, but because you all over there have a different perspective. You know, we're into UFOs and aliens. You're into fairies, right? And earth energies and this kind of thing. So it's a different environment and a different mindset. But I point to that as real evidence that there is at least a reason to go beyond speculation. And one of the areas that I think is most interesting for people to look at is just ask the question, how did your body get the way it is? How did your brain come into formation? What was it that actually activated the neurocortex of our brain? Modern neuroscience says it's either group sex, it's psychedelic substances, it's cosmic rays from Cygnus, or it's an intentional intervention in the fusing of two of our telomeres in one of our chromosomes into one that activated our neocortex. And that could be one of the smoking gun areas to look at here in terms of an intervention in human evolution.
All right. So that's, I mean, there's a lot there to pick up on as well. And I find this area of kind of human evolution being influenced by alien beings a really fascinating area just to concentrate on for a minute. So I suppose my main question on that is, would, if that were the truth, would that kind of contradict Darwinian evolution as we know it, the theory of evolution, or would it complement that field of study?
Well, in a way, it does complement it, but it goes to this idea of what they call, Francis Crick labeled it, directed panspermia. And of course, he's one responsible for identifying the double helix of our DNA. And he pointed to extraterrestrial intervention in the 1970s as the reason why we have the double helix of DNA and the explanation for human evolution. And this is, can be in the form of literally an intervention by physical beings, or once again, it can be cosmic rays, it can be other stimuli that they're pointing to. I mentioned psychedelic substances. This is seriously considered by neuroscientists to explain how our neocortex was activated. And it's very important for us to at least consider this because, of course, we are now, well, let me put it this way. The neocortex is activated 200,000 years ago, mysteriously. 40,000 years ago, there's a sudden and inexplicable explosion in human art and civilization. We suddenly become human. And now, right now, as we speak, Elon Musk, Neuralink, U.S. government are wanting to sprinkle nanoparticles into our neocortex and put a new layer on our brain and wire us up to the AI cloud. So we're now the ones who are actually directing our own evolution. And it's important for us to at least understand this progression and ask the question, where is all this technology coming from? I mean, this is something we talk about a lot on Ancient Aliens, and especially in the American scene, the belief that in 1947, the U.S. government recovered a craft. This is now spoken of in Congress, that we recovered a crash at Roswell. There were non-biological entities that were in that craft. These are in all the briefing documents now that are public record. The U.S. government has had a crashed UFO and what they describe as victims, non-biological entities, for over 70 years. And it's been proposed that we've been harvesting technology from those disks ever since. And this could explain in part the rapid rise of technology in our world and suggest possibly another round of intervention.
Okay. I mean, I think I'm probably willing to accept on the balance of evidence that Elon Musk is an extraterrestrial. I think I could come round to getting on board with that. But you said something really interesting there about this idea of activating the neocortex. I mean, what does that mean to activate it? And how is that distinguishable from maybe, you know, common descent or natural selection, rather, this adaptation that could have occurred through, you know, life forms to account for that? What's this activation you speak of?
Well, there's this mysterious explosion, a sudden activation of the neocortex 200,000 years ago. If our neocortex is not activated, there is no I, there's no Stephen, there's no William, there's no you and me. It's just all oneness. We're all a blur. But suddenly, with the activation of the neocortex, this gives us the ability to do math, science, art, all of the things that we consider to be the rudimentary aspects of civilization. And it's, again, this great mystery about exactly how that happened. And again, there's disagreement among neuroscientists. They can't agree, but I've cited the line of speculation that they're going on, and they are seriously considering. Even the United States National Academy of Science said that the fusion of the two chromosomes that activated the neocortex is unnatural. So that goes against Darwin right there. That is not natural, this fusion. We have 23 chromosomes. The great apes have 24. How did this occur? The National Academy of Science, 1991, in a paper said it is unnatural what occurred to make this happen, although they didn't explain how it occurred. And this is what has opened up the line of speculation that there could have been some form of an intervention.
Okay. I suppose this has two questions I have. I'll ask the first one, actually. So this idea that maybe aliens accounted for the rise of human beings as we know it, you know, the import of consciousness, I think, is what we're talking about, in a sense, the ability to have this concept of I, you know, create art, music, fall in love, all these things that seem uniquely placed for our species. wouldn't you then have an extra problem really there, that once you kind of explained our existence and our origin from that perspective, you have this whole other headache of trying to explain the origin of these extraterrestrial beings? Doesn't it really just pose more questions than it answers?
It really does. I mean, but the thing is that, and this gets back into what ancient astronaut theory, which is the basis for this conversation, which is starts in really the 1960s with Eric Van Daniken's book, The Chariots of the Gods. But before that, it was based on something called Russian cosmism. And the Russian mystics at the turn of the 20th century started to develop this idea that there are advanced extraterrestrial species out there. They have visited Earth in the past, and that what happens is that they go from, they're planet hoppers. They go from planet to planet looking for intelligent life, just like we're doing right now. The Kepler Space Telescope, the James Webb are out there looking for a backup planet for us right now. Elon Musk wants to move us to Mars. We're doing exactly what they say the ancients said these otherworldly beings did hundreds of thousands of years ago, perhaps. So it could be that this is simply a natural way of life moving across the universe, so to speak.
What would explain then, I mean, in your view, I mean, if they intervened in some sense hundreds of thousands of years ago, have they just ceased to be part of our life, our culture? Are they still around? Have they been since? Is there anything to make you think perhaps we are still not alone?
Well, when in 2017, the New York Times published an article along with two videos shot by U.S. Navy pilots in F-18 aircraft that were chasing an object they refer to as the Tic Tac craft. This was a craft that could go from 40,000 feet to just several feet above the ocean floor in a matter of seconds. It could travel miles almost instantly. And all of the assessments that have been done have shown that this is technology that's 1,000 years in advance of anything our near peers have. It's not China, it's not Russia, it's not UK. So where is this technology coming from? They wouldn't identify it as an otherworldly or extraterrestrial civilization, opening up the possibility that these beings have always been here. But there's another layer that goes on top of this now. I work with Dr. Travis Taylor, who is the chief scientist on the U.S. government's UAP or Unidentified Aerial Phenomena program. He's the engineer that has literally handled some of these artifacts and is the chief analysis or person doing the analysis on these videos and these craft. He's very open to the possibility that these craft don't even come from our material world, that they are projections from even a higher dimensional reality than you and I are accustomed to perceiving. So what's happening right now is that there is just this explosion in interest in this subject. You've got whistleblowers coming out of the woodwork, so to speak, from within the US government that are talking about this craft and talking about how dramatically advanced it is compared to anything we know of today. And it gets quite alarming for some people because it suggests that if there's a technology on this planet that's 1,000 years in advance of what the U.S. military has or China or U.K. is presently displaying, then who actually is running this planet? And those are very important questions for us to consider.
Okay, so I might swing back around to a few things there, because that's a really in-depth answer. Thank you. I suppose as well, a lot of people were thinking, where do we place God in all this? You know, specifically monotheism, because I imagine a lot of people who have their, you know, creation stories and they have their own accounting of how human life began. This, right. I imagine, could be quite distressing and cause quite a bit of cognitive dissonance. Where do you place this? Does this still leave room for God?
I believe it does. Oxford has done studies on this, and they said a couple of years ago it's going to send people, if there's an announcement, a revelation of extraterrestrial life, be it some microbial form on Mars, which is what we anticipate the UK to be doing here soon. Maybe not Mars, but maybe a nearby planet that Kepler's identifying. You know, we're going to talk about microbes on another world in the UK. In America, we're talking about crash disks and non-biological entities. And then the question then becomes, well, where's God in all of this? And that is a very important question. As I mentioned, Oxford has said they believe, and they're, according to their studies, it's going to drive people back into their books, into the Quran, into the Bible, into the Torah. And what they're going to be discovering there is that these beings have been there all along. We just weren't paying attention or perhaps interpreting the stories correctly. But I agree with you. I mean, that We do these Ancient Aliens live shows, and people ask me frequently if I could ask one question of an extraterrestrial, what would it be? And I, you know, I have a couple of them. One, is it Led Zeppelin or The Who? Because that would tell us an awful lot about them. Is it the Beatles or the Stones? Are they AI? And ultimately, who do they pray to? And where do they believe they go when they die? Because that, I believe, is ultimately the universal question. And I think what we have to do is recognize that there is an abundance of life in our cosmos, in our universe. We're finding, we've got over 1,000 exoplanets that we've identified now. Again, we are actively searching for a backup planet to move humanity to. And what we're soon going to be finding is the revelation that there's not just water on these planets. Literally, NASA has used AI to look for what are called technosignatures. This is evidence of advanced industrial or mechanical type of civilizations on planets in our nearby neighborhood. Human analysts weren't able to detect any technosignatures in nearby planets. When NASA turned AI on it, they found 8 planets that show possible evidence of technosignatures. This means like nuclear, this means chemical, this means signatures of advanced technology that perhaps exist on these worlds. And I think what's about to happen is our worldview, maybe it's about like this right now, is about to expand exponentially.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Okay, I mean, so first thought is I think it's the Beatles. To be fair, that's where I come down on that emphatically. No sitting on the fence on that one for me, for sure. But I mean, you said something really interesting then, this idea that perhaps a revelation of extraterrestrial proportions would make people revisit their holy scriptures and look for it. But I mean, isn't that kind of a product of sort of confirmation bias, in the sense that a lot of religious people are starting from a very dogmatic tribal allegiance to a script, and they want to make everything fit that. And secondly, I suppose, you know, the big questions, where do we come from? Where do we go from where we die, when we die? Sometimes I suppose it can be a little bit unsatisfying to consider perhaps we just evolved primates and we're, you know, a cosmic accident and a consequence of, you know, natural progression. I mean, can some of this come from the idea that we want to be thought of as special, the idea that these ultra intelligent, super advanced beings have took a special interest in little me and you? Isn't that more exciting in a way?
It really is, but it's also quite daunting because we will realize really we are actually maybe a little more insignificant than we thought before, especially if they are going to be treating us like house pets, like AI will in the next few years. So I think we have to just really have a careful understanding about this, at least an appreciation of it. And you bring up a dynamic, the religious bias. This is something that is really an important part of the conversation here in America in the disclosure movement, because within the U.S. government, you literally have factions, Bible-believing generals and decision makers that literally believe any extraterrestrial that we might be talking about is demonic. And seriously, I mean, this we talk about this and they talk about it. And Lou Elizondo is one of the more well-known whistleblowers who was actively involved for over 10 years in cataloging what the U.S. government has been doing with UFOs and so forth. And he became a whistleblower because he was tired of pushing up against that religious bias where these generals said, we are not disclosing this because these are demonic beings. This is demonic technology. And the American public, you know, just really isn't quite prepared in many instances for that kind of a conversation. You do have your evangelicals and your the religious people that are, really deeply entrenched in their story, but it is a reality that we have to think about.
All right, good answer. So I'll just run through a few questions. We've had a couple here. So you've mentioned NBEs a few times, non-biological entities. What do you mean by non-biological? And thanks to Bauerau for that one.
Yeah, I mean, what is a non-biological entity, right? They haven't fully disclosed the nature of those beings. However, given the vast distances that separate us from other star systems, they're either coming here as robots or they're coming here as energetic beings. And so it suggests to me that we're dealing with some kind of robotic clone or something like that.
Okay. Jake Forder has asked, in response to the kind of alien evolution angle, are there DNA anomalies to add weight to this view?
There is. I mean, the greatest mystery is literally how life evolved, how our body came to be the way it is, why these various religious traditions insist that we're made in the image of a non-earthly being, and what exactly does that mean? And so that's an area that has drawn some focus. I mentioned the Egyptian god Ptah, their god of technology, as they describe him. In their text, they say he fashioned the human body. And literally, in his hieroglyph, Ptah has a double helix within his hieroglyphs. And that just, you point to that, you look at that, and you go, this is sounds too just obvious or too simple. How could this be that this being, this Egyptian say, came from Sirius, fashioned the human body? He didn't create the human body. He tweaked it. He fashioned it. He augmented it, perhaps. And this is an area that I think geneticists really need to be taking a deep look at.
Okay. Well, this next question, I'm going to be honest with him. I have no idea what it means, but because it was so polite, I'm going to put it to you anyway. Ask about giants, please. From Fred Witherall. Does that mean anything to you?
Sure. The giants are all part of the lore of extraterrestrials. In the book of Genesis, we have beings described as fallen angels who came from the divine realm, who mated with the daughters of men. They had offspring, hybrid offspring, that are referred to as Nephilim in the book of Genesis. That word Nephilim is translated as either mighty ones or giants. And they're described as very tall, sometimes over 10 feet tall or more. And they're considered to be the hybrid offspring of human females and fallen angels.
Okay, I am glad I asked that in the end.
The lore says they built Stonehenge, just for curiosity's sake.
Okay. And another fairly left field question from Gene Thornton. Are there alien bases on the moon?
I don't have direct evidence that there are alien bases on the moon. However, studying the moon is quite fascinating. We know for certain that it's hollow. It rings like a bell. We know this when NASA accidentally crash landed. I think it was the Apollo, was it 11, that accidentally crash landed onto the moon. And the moon rang like a gong for almost 3 hours. So when we went back to the moon, they intentionally crashed into the moon with a hard landing in order to duplicate the effect, and they measured it. So there's many, many mysteries and anomalies about the moon, beginning with its placement, the precise placement of the moon. Without that placement, life on Earth as we know it would simply not exist. It regulates the tides. It regulates the menstrual cycle of Earth females. There's so many mysteries about the moon. And I'm not one that's going to go so far as to say it's like a Death Star from Star Wars, but it is a highly enigmatic orb up in our sky.
I think we can rule out cheese at this point as well. That's my that's the extent of my moon knowledge. So I suppose a lot of people will be thinking, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago when these advanced beings visited us. I mean, we mentioned this idea of the distance they travel. So, we lean into this idea of non-biological. A lot of people would be looking at like the kind of fossil record, archaeological evidence, and not finding anything that's kind of anachronistic. You know, we find rocks, we find bones exactly where you'd expect them to be in the, you know, kind of the evolutionary kind of story. Why is it we're not finding something that's so advanced, so mind-blowing, that it would completely put to bed any doubt about advanced civilizations?
Well, some people believe we have actually found that. The Great Pyramid of Giza is cited as Exhibit A. We simply have no idea how the pyramid was built. We don't know its exact function. And there are other structures like that around the world that are suggestive of at least an advanced civilization in the pre-flood world. I mean, pre-10,000 BC, we're dramatically opening a window into that ancient past. And it's only been within, say, the last 100 years or so that we've actually been looking. And now I think this is where we're going to start to, for certain, push back the dating of human civilization. I mean, when I grew up, I'm 61 years old. When I was growing up, we were told civilization is 5,000 years old. That's it. Now we know it's at least 14,000 years old. That's a dramatic difference. We discovered a place called Göbekli Tepe in southeastern Turkey, a massive, massive temple complex that was built before the time of the flood, before we're supposed to have the wheel, human organization, any kind of engineering skills, anything like this. And this is a real whodunit kind of mystery now that archaeologists are confronted with, and some won't even look at it.
Okay. Catherine Barnes has asked, is our planet a closed system? Does that relate to laws of thermodynamics? Maybe, I mean, the sun shining on us, would that suggest it's not a closed system? I'm not sure if that's something you want to touch on, if not in your wheelhouse.
No, not my wheelhouse. Thank you, though.
No problem. Okay. So in terms of this field of study, and obviously you dedicate your time to this and you're passionate about it, if you had, for instance, unlimited funding, unlimited resources, where would you want to shine the spotlight for us? What would be the first thing you'd want to concentrate on to kind of further this field of study?
I really think that Egypt still has many secrets to reveal. We know that by estimates of Egyptologists themselves that less than 10% of what we know of the Egyptian civilization has been revealed. And there are so many wonders that have just been discovered even in the past 150 years or so that I really believe that that would be a tremendous place to focus our effort.
So what is it about the Middle East, do you think, that plays such a rich role in religion, archaeology, things like that? I mean, it's one particular region on planet Earth seems to be where a lot of things have happened in kind of human history and culture.
It really has. It's true. And I think it's partly has to do with perhaps a location on the planet. At that time, it might have been more hospitable. You have to remember North America. I mean, if we're talking 10,000 BC or prior to 10,000 BC, North America was covered in over a mile of ice. And there were regions around the planet that simply were not habitable. However, the Middle Eastern region was. And so that perhaps starts to explain why it is. Plus, there the abundance of written record that is there and artifacts as well. But once again, we're showing evidence that this was literally a global culture, that you find the same construction styles in Peru that you find in Egypt, you find it in the Pacific and elsewhere.
Okay, William. Well, that's flown by.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.